breaking down Wisconsin basketball. This is The Swing with Zach Heilprin and Jesse Temple on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.
Yes, welcome into The Swing. I'm Zach Heilprin. He's Jesse Temple. Well, the Badgers picked up a couple of wins and a not-so-great loss since last time we had a show. Badgers went on the road, lost at Michigan. We'll get into that a little bit. We'll get into, obviously, them bouncing back at Rutgers and then taking care of Northwestern in, I guess, relatively easy fashion, considering all the games that Wisconsin has played that have been tight. They beat them 68-52 on Wednesday night at the Kohl Center, and they'll now get ready to face Ohio State on Saturday. They got 12 games left, Jesse. They got 12 games left this season, sitting at 6-2 in Big Ten play. They're a game out of first place behind Michigan, also sitting there behind Iowa, I believe, who is also just has one loss in the conference. So it's going to be a tight race, but the three games that we've seen since the last time we did a show, your big takeaway, what's your biggest takeaway from those games?
Oh, my biggest takeaway has to be the insertion of Tyler Wahl into the starting lineup for Nate Reavers. To me, that's a huge story because we're talking about a guy in Reavers who had started 79 consecutive games. And I give Greg credit for making this move. There's a senior who has started for multiple seasons, and you're choosing to move him to the bench in favor of a sophomore. And I understand in the Rutgers game, it made sense to say, well, it's a matchup issue, and Tyler fits that matchup better. But then he started Tyler again against Northwestern, and frankly, it's the right choice. And Tyler has been playing better basketball, and Nate, for whatever reason, appeared to regress in his senior season. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, we know the skill set is there. We have seen it at times, but he has really struggled of late. You look at some of the numbers the last handful of games, and it's like he's a completely different player. Even over the last seven games, he's 19 for 58 from the field, 32.7%. He's made one of 13 threes. And the last three games, which is this three-game stretch that we're going to be talking about, he's only 4 for 22 from the field and 1 for 9 on threes. It seems to be a confidence issue, among other things, and credit to Greg for making this move, and also Tyler for stepping up and playing very well the last couple games in his two starts. Even if he didn't have a big offensive game against Rutgers, I thought he was tremendous defensively, and he had a career high in scoring against Northwestern.
Well, that's what he does, right? Like, here's the thing about it's not like they were playing Nate and Micah Potter together a lot anyways, right? Like, it's not in having them in this, it matters, I guess, from the outside point of view, who starts, right? Like, that's everyone wants to talk about the starting lineup. I don't necessarily think it matters a whole ton. I think it's more who finishes, but it is significant that they went ahead and said it was matchup related the first time, and then they went ahead and did it again, right?
Exactly.
You know, but it's not like Nate's not going to play. We saw that against in the Indiana game where he played. Because Micah's defensive, I guess we call them liabilities, and that happened against Northwestern too. I mean, Nate is a good defender. He's really, really struggling on the offensive end. Micah Potter, a very good offensive player, really, really struggling on the defensive end. Can you put them together somehow? I mean, is there a way to put those two together and just take the best of both of their games? Probably not, huh? We don't have the science for that yet.
Maybe not. Sometimes. I mean, it's like you said, like they're not going to be on the floor together all the time, but it's not like Greg's never going to have them on the floor together. I know that was a big storyline before.
I think it's clear now that it's not going to happen a ton.
No, but yeah, I mean, look at Nate's minutes too. You know, you talk about the Indiana game, that was a double overtime game and he had played 35 minutes. In the last three games, he hasn't played more than 22 minutes in any of those games. And it's just so weird to be talking about this. He's the all-time leading shot blocker in school history. And I would have said, if before the season, I would have said, of all the guys on the team, he is most likely to be a first-team All-Big Ten player. It just seemed like he was on that trajectory.
He was the preseason on that preseason team, wasn't he? He was one of the ten players mentioned.
I think so. And you and I were texting about this, and I said, I'm trying to remember a senior at Wisconsin who had this many expectations coming in and has not come close to meeting it. And I I was struggling to come up with a name, and this is not even anywhere near on the same plane.
Yeah.
But I thought about Jordan Taylor's senior year, and I only say that because of how otherworldly he was as a junior when he had John Lohr. He was still great as a senior, but his shooting numbers took a step back, his scoring took a step back, and he also didn't have as good of a team. So it's not nearly the same situation as Nate. Very rarely do we see this at Wisconsin, and I understand we're a few minutes into this, and it just seems like I'm hating on Nate. I don't want to make it seem that way, but you know, this is a starter who had been starting since he was a freshman and is taking a step back, but I give him credit for keeping his head in it. Yeah. He hasn't shot well. He came in though and made a couple nice plays, even against Northwestern. I mean, his first touch or one of his first touches, he had a shot fake and he made a jumper and he had a nice kick out to Tyler Wall who made a three. So he's still doing good things, but it's just not at the level that we expected.
Yeah, and you mentioned him not playing more than 22 minutes in the last three games. I mean, Michael Potter played 17 against Northwestern, had 23 against Rutgers, 24 against Michigan. So it's not like he has been all of a sudden, his minutes have all of a sudden shot up because Nate hasn't been out there, right? But no, this is more, to me, I think this is more about Tyler Wall's confidence growing. And,
oh, for sure.
You know, they wouldn't have been able to make this move without Tyler making this jump in his confidence, and he's a good defender. Like he's always, that's kind of what he was known for coming in, right? Like that was kind of who he was and what everyone expected out of him. It was always the offensive side of the ball or the offensive end of the floor, I guess. I'm not talking football, Zach. It's the offensive end of the floor. And what we've seen these last, going back to the Indiana game where he hit those two big threes, he was 2 of 9 from three before that. He's 5 of 6 now, including the one against Northwestern that Greg Gard called the play of the game, where Johnny Davis does a great job saving the offensive rebound and throwing it back towards the top of the key. And, Tyler Wall caught it. Demetri Trice right next to him, hands up. I think he even mouthed something, "Hey, right here." And Tyler Wall, he didn't admit to this after the game, but he essentially took one dribble up to the three-point line and knocked down the three-pointer to set off what I think it was ended up being like a 14-3 run with him in the game before he subbed out again. And he said after the game, "Did you see Demetri sitting right there next to you?" And he goes, "Yeah, I kind of heard him, but by that time it was too late." And I thought it was funny because when I went back and watched the video, he definitely looked right at Demetri and then took the dribble and then took the shot. So it was a huge play, but it's just, his confidence is growing in all that offseason work that we talked about with Orlando Tucker in our last episode about all that offensive work is starting to play out, and you can see it growing, his confidence growing every time a shot goes down.
Yeah, I think confidence is the big word there. And you talk about defensively, that's a big reason why he has been able to get on the floor earlier in his career. And I go back to even starting with the second half of the Rutgers game. That was a game that obviously very easily could have gone off the rails for Wisconsin. Rutgers was hanging around. That game was tied with 8 minutes left. And some of the plays that he made the difference in the game that second half. I'm talking about Wall. He hit a jumper early in that half, give Wisconsin a three-point lead. He hit a difficult turnaround on the block to put Wisconsin ahead about 4 minutes in. And there's just multiple instances where I just have good defense by Wall. He played good paint D on Ron Harper Jr. to force a miss. He took a charge with about 5 minutes left. He blocked Caleb McConnell's shot. And so it's just kind of those little things that start to add up. And maybe that does impact him offensively. We know how much time he put into the offseason to become a better player. But, yeah, he's just stronger. He's better. He's quicker. Even before that three in the Northwestern game, he had a really strong, patient take for a layup and an and-one less than 30 seconds into the second half. So he's starting to do a little bit of everything, even to a greater degree than he did before. And at this point, it's awfully hard to say you're coming out of the starting lineup. He's done everything that Greg has wanted him to do. And I see this continuing, at least for the foreseeable future. Not to say that Nate can't re-enter the starting lineup or that he won't play a ton of minutes, but this just clearly Greg saw something in making this move, and he's been proven right.
I think we can't talk about the Rutgers game and the way things played out there at the end without talking about Demetri Trice, because
yes.
He barely touches the ball, and he's the point guard, so he obviously touches the ball, but he was barely involved in the offense for a large stretch of that second half, and then all of a sudden they needed him, and he hits a couple of big threes and hits the runner. And all of a sudden, that game's not as close as it once was. I mean, it was back and forth, back and forth. It felt like Wisconsin was going to lose that game. And yet, when Trice needed to, late in it, he came alive. And I continue to be marvel at just his development and his maturity and doing things that, you know, not necessarily we've seen him do the last 4 years.
Right. And that was a 12-0 run that put the game away, and Trice scored 8 of those points. A couple of those were the threes that you mentioned. The first one was I thought it was a very smart play design. I mean, Reaver set a screen, and then he stepped behind the screen like the defender thought Trice was going to move toward the basket, and he buried the three. And then the next one was a pull-up three as the shot clock is winding down. And obviously, you talk about the drive that gave Wisconsin a 10-point lead. Well, the game was basically over. But just look at the progression he's made in the second half of this season so far. His first 8 games, he was averaging 11 points a game. His last 7, he's averaging 19.1. I feel like we say this every episode, he's become the player that Wisconsin's absolutely needed and the go-to guy. And it's just been so much more consistent than we've ever seen. And that is elevating Wisconsin to an entirely different level.
It is. And he's the guy, right? I mean, we kind of talked about that last time out, but it's continued. And did you ever expect him to be this guy? Was there ever, you know, throughout these last 4 years, you know, when it's kind of been an up and down, did you ever expect it to be this for him?
No, I really didn't. I sort of felt like his career was going to go kind of like Trayvon Jackson's, and I no disrespect because Trayvon was a clutch guy, hit a lot of game winners, but what I'm referencing is just kind of that constant lightning rod for criticism, kind of like the quarterback at Wisconsin.
That's every point guard, right? Except for, I mean, even Bronson Koenig got some of that.
Yeah, but I just remember Trayvon, it seemed like it was a little more intensified, and I felt like that's where things appeared to be headed with Dimitric.
Yes, you're right. You're right. I apologize. You're completely right. Trayvon Jackson was at the school around the same time that Joel Stave was, and they had a kinship in that where they just consistently took the brunt of all the criticism, even though it perhaps wasn't always deserved to be thrown their way. But go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're good. I mean, it's a different scenarios, right? Trayvon got hurt and so didn't take the step forward that maybe he could have at the end, but was a key component to the team. But with Dimitric, it's, like I said, it's at another level. I mean, his scoring took a step back last year from the year before, and I didn't know exactly what to expect out of him this year, but he's done a lot of things right. We've talked consistently about the assist to turnover ratio and the ability to limit those types of mistakes, but it's just the scoring and it's that consistent clutch factor. So I did not expect this from him, but it's been great for Wisconsin, obviously, and it has to continue for the Badgers to make that deep March run.
Do we need to talk about the Michigan game?
I think we should.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't look as bad now because Wisconsin won the last two and then Michigan got destroyed by Minnesota.
But doesn't that make it kind of look... Doesn't? I think Michigan was feeling themselves when they went to the barn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I guess what I mean is it just further proves that the Big Ten is just insanely difficult and is going to have some wacky results.
Right.
But like that was one of the worst stretches of Wisconsin basketball
I can remember.
And on the flip side, Michigan was awesome. They looked like the second coming of, I don't know, the last undefeated, like the Indiana team that went undefeated in the 70s or something insane like that. But I couldn't believe what I was witnessing, just the run that was happening. I'm trying to look. It was
the
43-6.
Yeah.
Right. Michigan got a layup with a little under 11 minutes left to take a 40-point lead.
Yeah.
And there was a graphic on television that said Wisconsin hadn't lost by at least 30 points in a game since, I believe it was 2002 against Maryland. And even though Wisconsin only lost by 23, they may as well have lost by 33. I mean, statistically, it's not going to count as a 30-point loss. But that was just an utter destruction. And like I said, one of the worst stretches you'll ever see from a Wisconsin basketball team while witnessing one of the best stretches on the flip side.
And it shouldn't happen to a team like this, right?
That's the other thing that I keep coming back to, and I know it's not fair,
right?
But I just think about this team with the expectations that it has. We never would have seen this out of the 2014-15 team, and we didn't, obviously. They lost 4 games and had one clunker, obviously, at Rutgers. But, like, a team this good should not be down by 40 points to any team. I don't care if it's the number one team in the country or a Michigan team that's top five and hasn't lost and it's on the road, but there's no fans. Like, it just didn't make any sense. Wisconsin didn't score any points, I think, the last, 6 minutes of the first half? And then they had one field goal. I think, what was it?
Because it was like 26-23 at one point. And it was 40-23. And it was 40-23 at the half.
And Potter made a 3-point play. So that ended a 14-0 Michigan run. And then Michigan went on another 14-0 run.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was even more than 14. It's like too hard to count. It was a 36-3 run. It just doesn't make any sense.
It was insane. And it was, all right. I don't know how much you put into it, other than I just don't think that you look at a team like that and say that shouldn't happen to a team that we think can make a deep run in March. And maybe, I don't know. I don't want to make too much of it because it's one game, right? Like, I don't want to just say there's not a chance in hell this team going to go to the Final Four now. Look what happened at Michigan. Like, I'm not going to say that. But it certainly throws some doubt into your mind a little bit. It has to. I don't know how it doesn't. But that said, the last time they lost by more than 23 points, I believe, was when they lost by 28 at Purdue back in the 2017-2018 year. And that was the year where that team was obviously didn't make the tournament, had all the injuries that they had. But then they came back the following month, and they retired Frank Kaminsky's jersey, and they beat number three Purdue. Wisconsin will get another shot at that at Michigan next month when they come to the Kohl Center. It's not going to be anywhere close to that same environment that they obviously stormed the court that night. And it was a special night for Frank Kaminsky and all that. But they have an opportunity to show what happened that night was not who they are. And I guess
right.
And we'll see.
I agree with you. I agree with you entirely. In no way does any loss in a college basketball season that has that many games and is as long as it is an indicator of what will happen in the postseason, but that doesn't mean it wasn't notable in the sense that this is a top 10 team that was down by 40 points. So
yeah,
yes, maybe it was a one-off, but still it was an inexplicable one-off if it is in fact just one.
Right. Because and we'll get into this here. Let's play a little sold or not sold. Demetri Trice, the best point guard in the Big Ten.
That's a really good question, and I'm inclined to say that he is the best point guard in the Big Ten. There's a handful of other candidates, and you look at Demetric's overall numbers relative to the rest of the league. He's not in the top 12 in scoring. He's 13th right now, but Wisconsin is not a team that's generally going to have a guy averaging 18 to 20 points a game unless he's a first-team All-American. He's averaging about 15 a game, but I think it's the way he's raised his game this season, and especially the second half so far of this season, and the assist-to-turnover ratio. Like, he has been the guy for a Wisconsin team that's a top 15 team, going to be a 3 or a 4 seed at worst the way things are headed. So I'm inclined to say that I'm sold, even though I understand a Marcus Carr at Minnesota is averaging over 20-plus points per game. I think Demetri does so many different things well for a really good team that I'll say yes.
All right. Sold or not sold? We got a little bit of an update on Lauren Bowman after the game against Northwestern. Sold or not sold, Lauren Bowman will play a game at Wisconsin.
I am sold, and I would not have said that before Greg was asked about it following the Northwestern game. The fact that he even said that Bowman is even one small step closer to rejoining the basketball team and that he's re-enrolled in school says a lot. So we don't know what the future holds, obviously, and it's still murky and unclear, everything that's gone into it, but that certainly sounds encouraging.
Did it seem a little weird that he said medical, and then he, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was... It's probably a question that he wasn't expecting to come after a game. I understand that. But with it, I'll say this. So I'm the one that asked the question, and I was expecting the question to be asked. I was not expecting to be called on as early as I was. I was hoping that I was going to be like the last one to be called on because it's one of those questions you ask at the end of a press conference, right? Like just kind of a non-game question thrown in at the end. We don't get to talk to Greg Gard every single, like before games all the time anymore. Like it used to be, you know, you get that Monday press conference, you get to talk to him every time and you could ask him questions like that. We don't normally, most of the time, the only time you get to ask Greg Gard questions is after games now. So the question was a little bit misplaced. So we got a little bit of an idea of where things stand, but still kind of a little bit murky.
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate. And it, maybe it is a little bit confusing because back in October, the sentiment and what was said was that he had to tend to a personal family matter. And Greg, after the game, said it's not in his hands. It's more in the medical hands. And it's that type of decision, but that he believed he was re-enrolled in school. Although also strange that perhaps he wouldn't know whether he was re-enrolled in school. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I think given the talent that Lorne had coming here and the level of excitement that came with him coming here, and just you hope for the best for any player that doesn't have an opportunity to play. Like, I think we all are hopeful that he'll be able to show everyone what he can do, assuming that everything lines up.
Yeah, no, for sure. Obviously, the classes are going to be virtual. He's going to be doing it from Detroit, so it's not like he's going to be in Madison and potentially practicing. I guess he could at any time start doing that if he's enrolled. Like, he could return whenever he wanted, but I think everyone's going to be pointing towards more next year than any late addition to the team this year, you would think. Sold or not sold, Wisconsin will finish in the top four in the Big Ten this year. Now, I said at the beginning of the show, they got 12 games left. They are 6-2 in Big Ten play. They play Ohio State, Maryland, Nebraska, Michigan, Northwestern, Purdue, and then Penn State twice, Illinois twice, and Iowa twice.
I'm sold at this point. I think they've done enough to make me a believer in them. And top four is just kind of something that sort of became a staple under Bo Ryan. And how many teams do we think legitimately have a chance to finish in the top four? Six, seven?
Yeah, but think about this. Like, is it fair to say Wisconsin's schedule has been pretty favorable up to this point?
Yeah, I think so. You know who's hasn't? Is Northwestern.
Right. Northwestern's been horrible.
they're not good, but that was their seventh straight game against a ranked opponent.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
10 of the 12 games that Wisconsin has left are against teams in the top 50 of the net rankings. Yeah. Six of those are in the top 20. The two against Illinois, the two against Iowa, the one against Michigan, and then obviously Saturday when they take on Ohio State. Like, this is, things get ramped up pretty quickly here. Like, I know Rutgers is a nice team. You know, they do get to play Nebraska again, but they'll get an opportunity to get a little revenge on Maryland. But none of these, the Big Ten in general is just difficult, obviously. But I don't know, like, what's a good record coming out of that? 8-4?
Well, I look at it last 12 games.
8-4? That'd be an amazing record out of that, wouldn't it?
I look at it like there's four built-in wins, and you've got with Penn State twice, which, because of the schedule realignment, they're playing twice in 6 days.
Did you know that they're in the top 50 of the net rankings, despite being 3-6?
I would not have believed that. They're 0-5 in the conference. I mean, if you play good conference teams or good competition and lose, it reflects well in your net rankings. So I don't know. They've lost five in a row. Like, I don't take that very far.
They are currently sitting at 45 in the net rankings. They're 3-6 on the year. Like, how does that happen?
Competition? I don't know. But anyway, I think they'll beat Penn State twice. I mean, Nebraska, Northwestern. So in my mind, that's four wins. And then, yeah, the rest of them are pretty challenging. So the question is, could you go 500 in those other eight? And certainly, I think Wisconsin does.
Okay.
So
you say 8-4.
Reasonable.
So that's 14-6.
That ought to be good enough in this year for
a top four finish. But that to me would be potential win, wouldn't it?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, it depends. I mean, if they're playing, you know, Iowa 6-1 there, Michigan 7-1. If you can't beat them, it's going to be tough to leapfrog them.
Right. For sure.
But there's just, realistically, I don't see a team outside of Michigan, Iowa, Wisconsin, Purdue, Illinois, maybe Ohio State, but challenging. I mean, Minnesota's 4-4. The rest of the teams are under 500. So I don't think there's that many half the Big Ten, yeah, but if we're talking about for the top four, there's just not a lot of extra contenders in my mind.
Okay, all right. So you were sold on them finishing the top four of the Big Ten, but do you think they win it?
I do not.
Okay.
I've been on the Iowa hype train all year, even though, as we know, they're going to give up 112 points. They're going to drop 114 on you.
Yeah. So exactly.
I mean, they're Iowa's the hottest team in the Big Ten right now. So
they are. I know Michigan lost like they did at Minnesota, but they also still beat the crap out of Wisconsin. And then who did they play this past?
Oh, Maryland. They destroyed Maryland. It was 87-63.
They have destroyed everyone they've beat.
Yeah.
Right? They also lost by 18 to Minnesota, who is ranked. So it's not like, I mean, but they beat a bunch of other ranked teams by double digits, including that Minnesota team at home. Northwestern obviously was not ranked at the time that they played them, but then went and beat, or were they ranked? I think Northwestern was ranked at the time that they lost at Michigan. That was earlier than their current six-game losing streak. But Michigan's a really good team. I think Michigan's the best team in the Big Ten. I think they end up winning it. They do play Iowa.
Yeah.
But it's only once.
Toward the end of the season.
It's
March 4th.
Yeah, second to last game. It's at Michigan. That may decide the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Is it fair?
I mean, I don't know that anybody's got like an easy path toward the end there.
Wisconsin certainly doesn't.
Yeah. But I mean, the same can be said for Iowa and Michigan too. I mean, there's some tough stretches for all those teams. But that's what makes this fun.
Yeah.
So I'm glad. I guess I'm glad we didn't record this after the Michigan game because everyone would have been freaking out.
That's why I didn't.
Things change very quickly.
That's why I didn't.
But you know what though? I feel like we're halfway into January or we're almost into February. We haven't even talked about bracketology once.
Where do you think I was going next, Jesse?
Okay,
so
I'll hold off.
Reading my mind. Right. Sold or not sold, Wisconsin will be a top four seed in the NCAA tournament. CBS Sports has them as a number four. ESPN has them as a number three. So a top four seed. So four or better.
Yeah, I am sold on that. I believe that will be a fair position for Wisconsin. I think three or four seems reasonable based on what we've seen so far. And as we discussed, how difficult the schedule is. You know, if you lose a few of those games, you can very easily make up for it by then winning a few of the other ones, even against the same team you just lost to, right? As we said, you know, they're going to play Iowa a couple times. And what I was going to say is that Iowa and Michigan are both one seeds in ESPN's latest bracketology. So I mean, that should tell you how insanely challenging the Big Ten is, and especially at the top. So I just don't think it's going to hurt your cause if you lose to a potential one seed. And if you beat them, that gives you a lot of credibility when the NCAA tournament committee is meeting and putting together its seedings.
So what happens with Penn State though, being at 45 like they are, where do they come in?
In terms of
seeding, obviously they're going to be in the tournament, having the net ranking as high as they are.
I feel a bit of sarcasm sometimes.
I don't get
we're not in person. It's tough to detect.
Yeah, no.
Not
in person, not you know, obviously not doing this while actually being able to see each other, which is it's coming up on we're getting close to a year of not
it's
doing
been
shows
too
in
long,
person.
Jack.
It
My
has
God.
Been. I know. Yeah. Miss this face, I'm sure. Yeah. No. I think four. Probably. I think they end up as a four, which would be sold on that.
That sounds fair.
I think that would make sense. Where would you if you were Wisconsin? Where would you want to play?
You know, I would want to play in Indianapolis.
But I was going to make that joke. I was going to make that joke, but I'm talking about like in Indianapolis, where would you want to play? Would you want to play in Lucas Oil right away? Would you want to play it at Butler? Would you want to play at Hinkle Fieldhouse? Or would you want to go down to, like, their success down at Bloomington? You know, I wouldn't mind if you're Wisconsin going down there. They've had a ton of success. The one place you would not want to go would be to West Lafayette if you're Wisconsin. Now, the team that plays there is obviously the bigger issue than the stadium itself. But
yeah,
I don't know. I where would you want to play?
Well, the one thing I would say about playing in an NFL venue, and like we've seen it before in the Final Four matchups and things like that, is it's just not a natural shooting background, but there's no fans. I don't know what the fan situation is going to be for that, but
it sounds like they're going to have two different courts there, so it's not going to be set up like it is for the Final Four.
Okay,
so where it's going to be set up like it used to be, where you have the court going from one end zone like the side of one end zone to the other end zone. You put up a big curtain in the middle, and you have like that. That is my understanding of how it's going to be set up at Lucas Oil, at least for the early games. Now, all the games are eventually going to be played at Lucas Oil. Like I think from the Sweet 16 on, I believe it, they're all going to be played. But those first two rounds are going to be played at a bunch of different places. So I don't know. It's not as big of a background, I think, as it would be.
Yeah. Ultimately, it probably doesn't necessarily matter. But I'm just going to keep it real. If I could play any of those places, I would play at Butler.
Yeah,
Hinkle is a cathedral.
Yeah.
Fun fact that nobody cares about. But ooh, when Wisconsin played in the Final Four in Indy, was that 2014-15?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a media basketball pickup game every year. It's organized by one of the national writers.
Yep.
And I made sure to get on the list. So we got to play at Hinkle on the actual court, and it was awesome.
That does sound fun.
Was fun.
I bet.
That was a good time.
I bet. What do you think about the new tournament schedule? I mean, it's not that big of a change, but they're going to be playing it is if you're not going and covering it, right? Like, that's probably what's going to happen this year. But, like, the one year Wisconsin didn't play in the tournament, me and you went, we went that first Thursday and got drunk and had a good time at the bar, right? Well, I got drunk.
Yeah,
I got drunk. I don't know about you. I got drunk. And you know, like that first Thursday is kind of like a holiday and for a lot of people. But like when you're covering it, it's different. You're on site, you don't get to do all that kind of stuff. But this first Thursday of the tournament is going to be the first four. Where you used to usually have it on Tuesday and Wednesday, they're gonna put it all on that Thursday. The first and second round is gonna be played, or I should say the first round's gonna be played on Friday and Saturday, the second round's gonna be Sunday and Monday, and then the following week, it's going to be the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight are going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Monday. And then it's the normal thing come the Final Four where it's Saturday night and then Monday night.
Yeah, I think Sweet 16 is a Saturday and a Sunday and the Elite Eight is a Monday and a Tuesday. But honestly, it doesn't really matter to me because
thanks.
I'm just going to make it a holiday. I don't even care what day of the week it is. I'm sure spring football will be going on, but who knows if...
That's funny. We'll you think we're going to have access to spring football? That's
no,
good.
No. A lot of Zooming. I think all of us and anyone that's listening, since we were kids, probably look forward to the NCAA tournament. I used to sneak a radio into classes in junior high school and try to stick it up my arm and then rest my head on my hand so I could listen to, the Big Eight tournament? I'm that old. Before it was the Big 12 and the NCAA tournament.
Yes, you're a Kansas guy. We know.
Yes. It's had to mention it at least once. I'm good at basket. I don't know if you heard. Anyway, yeah. It's going to be fun. I don't care when it is. I'm just glad that they've got this sorted out. And I actually think it's kind of cool that they're just kind of playing it across the state of Indiana.
Indiana's basketball. Basketball's life.
It is true. Lived in Muncie, Indiana for 2 years. Another fun fact. Just hitting you with all of it.
Awesome.
I know how excited you are about it.
Love it. All right. So let's get into some Twitter questions before we wrap up the show here. Joe, see, this is kind of something we talked about earlier. Joe says, has the move to bring Nate off the bench worked? He says no, in his opinion. And will it work? How long do you stick with that strategy for motivation or improvement?
They are 2-0 with Tyler Wall in the starting lineup.
They were pretty successful with Nate in the starting lineup too, but yeah, go ahead.
Tyler's giving them more. I mean, I don't know how long Greg's going to go with this. I don't know if this is the rest of the season type situation or if he was trying to light a fire under Nate's butt, but Tyler just scored a career high. So I think it's been successful. You're giving up something, but you're getting other stuff, right? You don't have as many minutes from your all-time leading shot blocker, but you're getting good quality defensive play and a more confident player. So I think it's been successful. Do you
I think it's
disagree?
No, I don't. I think getting those two guys on the floor at the same time was Badger basketball porn to people. Like that was what people wanted last year. That's what it was. That's everyone desperately wanted to see it. We've seen it. It is what it is. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Nate's not playing at a level that he deserves to be on the court as much as he did earlier in the year. Like, this, he just doesn't. He hasn't. To me, it seems pretty clear, right? Like, this has been a success, especially on the defensive, especially on Tyler. You know, he was great on defense against Rutgers, was really good offensively against and defensively against Northwestern. Not to shoot down the question, I get it. You know, to each his own, and people can see differently. I'm wondering what you would see to say that it hasn't been.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say. I think I said before Nate was 4 for 22. I shortchanged him a field goal in the last three games. He's 5 for 22, and that should say it all. You got it's not there offensively, and Tyler's been doing a lot of really good things. So
right,
I'll be interested to see how much longer Greg uses that lineup.
Well, and here's the thing. It's not just about Tyler Wall. It's also about Micah Potter, and Nate still is playing minutes in place of Micah because. As we talked about earlier, it's just not great defensively. That was the other question I wanted to ask about is, do we just accept Micah Potter's defense for what it is? Greg Gard's not going to, and the Badgers aren't going to, but should we, as people that watch the team, should it just what it is what it is? Or do we say that this is what I said a couple weeks ago, it's still development. He's still young. Like, he's still relatively new, right? Like, he's only been here.
Is he still young?
He's not young. He's certainly not young, but he's still relatively new. He's only been here for like 2 years now, right? So, I was trying to.
You were massaging it.
I was. At this point, though, some of the stuff we've seen, I just think it just may be what it is.
I think that's where I'm that's the camp I fall in at this point. And it's okay. Everybody has their strengths and their weaknesses. Obviously, I know people would love him to be better and play more minutes because he can do a lot of other good things. But this is just kind of who he is as a player. There's going to be times where he's just outmatched on the defensive end or outquicked or struggles. But you kind of have to take the good with the bad in this situation because of how far along he is. I don't see some drastic change coming in the last, 12 regular season games?
Yeah. This is a question that I would love to ask, but with Zoom, it hasn't necessarily been terribly easy, and maybe it's a question we can ask moving forward here, is just how the players have reacted. This from Nuclear Badger, how players have reacted to Nate Reavers coming off the bench. That's something that I actually am interested in, and good question that'll probably be used the next time we have a Zoom conference. But he says, if Tyler Wall has figured out how to shoot threes, what is his ceiling?
Are they looking for a player comp?
I don't know
the answer on that one.
I don't know. Like it changes things. We talked about it. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. It changes him. It changed because he has the ability to put the ball on the floor and get to the basket. But if people don't have to respect the 3-pointer, you know, it's a lot more difficult to do it. So I think it's huge. I think he's never going to be I don't think he's ever going to be a 40%er. But what he's done the last 3 games, 4 games, 5 of 6 is great. And it forces people to at least put that in their scouting report that he's got that in his game.
To me, and I don't know if the question is just the ceiling for the rest of the season or the ceiling for his future, but there's 6 seniors on the roster right now. So again, we don't necessarily know who's going to come back because they have the option, but if most of them leave, like, who's left that has playing experience? It's Tyler Wall. It's Jonathan Davis. The ceiling to me is that Wall becomes the team's leading scorer. And I don't know, you know, exactly what that looks like, but I think he's got a tremendously high ceiling given the step that he's taken this season. Cause that was the knock on him even coming out of high school that he could do a lot of good things, but 3-point shooting really wasn't his forte. And so if he's developing that's just a whole different dynamic.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. He also asks, who can jump higher? Jonathan Davis or Khalil Iverson?
Wow.
I think Jonathan Davis can jump quicker. We kind of talked about that with Orlando Tucker. I think he can he's a jumper.
Yeah.
He's a quicker jumper. Khalil, I think Khalil's a higher jumper.
That's where I was going. When Davis has as many highlight reel dunks as Iverson, then I guess we could reevaluate the conversation. I'd love to see a jump off between the two of them, but Iverson's dunks were as as good as we've seen from a Wisconsin player on a consistent basis in recent memory, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And then why do the Badgers go for long stretches not scoring or missing large numbers of threes in a row? The shots didn't go down?
Yeah, I believe it's on the jump that you may hear it's a make or miss league. So
right?
I don't know. I found an old story somewhere that said that Iverson had a 38-inch vertical leap coming out of high school.
Yeah.
So
probably him.
That's pretty good.
Oh man,
how's that for expert analysis?
Now I wish
I bet it was 40 plus.
Now I wish I had asked Orlando what his was. Now he probably could go get it at the NBA Combine, but he was clearly Iverson could fly.
But I do to the last question though. Like there is a part of me that feels pretty concerned about. All it takes is for this to happen one time for 6 minutes in the NCAA tournament and it's over, right? We talk about that every year. That's obviously a big part of getting through, but just to see it happen for spurts is a bit concerning, I think.
Well,
Wisconsin's good enough to overcome it, but like
they are three.
This team is too good to be doing that.
They are so three happy though. They
can't, yeah.
I mean, now they made 10, they went 10 for 27 against Northwestern. That 10 is the most in a Big Ten game this year. It's 37%, but that's three straight games. That's three straight games under 40%, and that's the first time that's happened since the beginning of February of last year, where they've gone three straight games without hitting at least 40% from three. And I think, to me, like that would be my biggest concern because they are so three happy, and they because of Nate, his limitations down low right now, and Mike Potter's deficiencies defensively, that they don't necessarily. Here's the thing about Tyler. Tyler can also has, I feel like, has some nice inside moves that he can use, but they don't have an easy bucket, right? Like they don't have a guy they can dump it into and get an easy bucket. Or so it feels like right now.
I feel like Potter is more likely to be that guy. We've seen it at times.
Sure.
I mean, didn't he? What did he have? The first 7 points?
He did.
The first 7 points against Northwestern.
He did.
A couple of them inside. And
here's the thing. Like, if you're only playing him 17 minutes a game because you don't trust him on the defensive end, like, that's not necessarily a guy you can go to and say, here, get in there. Go do this. We need to end a run here.
Yeah, I do think some of these droughts are worrisome. Like, let's go back to the Rutgers game. We were praising Wisconsin for going on this 12-0 run. But why did they need that? Because earlier in the second half, they went 6 minutes and 39 seconds without any points. It ended when I think Potter scored, or Aleem Ford scored on a dish from Potter and made – or he got fouled and made a couple of free throws. But, like – you shouldn't be going 6.5-7 minutes without any points, even if it's a road game against a tough opponent. Like that's happened numerous different times this season. And so, like I said, they're good enough to overcome it, but in the NCAA tournament, I mean, that can sink your season very quickly.
Sold or not sold, Kira asks. She says, sold or not sold, Temple's going to hedge on the next question. I'm going to say sold.
Let me answer that question by not answering it, saying I'm going to hedge on that question.
And two, sold or not sold, Tyler Wall starts more games than Nate Reeves for the rest of the season.
I would be sold on that. Okay. I mean, what? I guess I would ask, what's it going to take for Greg to reverse course on this? Nate's going to have to start to show up more consistently, right? Is it more a question of Nate doing something as opposed to Tyler not being ready? Because last year, Tyler started a couple of games, right? And then it just kind of became clear that maybe that wasn't quite, he wasn't ready for that role. Is that a fair thing to say?
I believe he started 3 games last year.
Yeah. So to me, I think Tyler ends up starting more games than Nate the rest of the way, but watch Greg switch now and make me look like an idiot.
Right.
But I mean, all we have to go on are the last 2 games, and Tyler's coming off a career high in scoring, and he looks super confident, and he shot the ball well, and he played good defense. So like, what else are you going to ask him to do?
Sticking on that Nate idea, Drunk Uncle asks, is Nate, through his play, on a trajectory to return next year?
Yeah, that's a really good question too. I mean, ultimately, and it's kind of like with the football situation, it's an individual decision. It's where you're at in classes. It's whether you want to come back for another year, but I feel like if you get to the level that he's at and you probably want to establish a professional career, right? And if you don't feel like you're ready for that step, it could make sense to come back. I mean, I can't speak for Nate because I'm not in his head. It's not a question that obviously people have asked him at this point, but I think it's reasonable to at least consider. And it's interesting because before the season, I think you and I both would have said like, he's gone. Yeah, he's going to be an all Big Ten player and then he'll take his shot. But kind of reminds me of like, to a lesser degree, a Caesar Williams situation on the football side, who was talking as though potentially he was going to leave.
I told you then, that. No. I told you when he started talking like he did that he was coming back. And you're like, I don't think so. I think he's gone.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, go ahead. Sorry. I just needed to call that out. I apologize.
Well, I would have thought that he was going to be gone. And then remember, like, I asked him about like what would it take to come back, and he was talking about
the
things he might not get to do to pursue the NFL draft and things like that.
Yep, that answer is what made me feel like he was coming back. And that answer felt like to you that he was going, that he was leaving.
But yeah, not. I just had to make a call. I had to make a call on a 2D, and I decided that he wouldn't be coming back. I mean, that answer opened the door much more for him to come back. I didn't know if he'd come back for a sixth year. But back to Nate. I mean, I think it's similar in the sense that, you know, you get to this level, your next step is to play professionally. And if you don't put yourself in the best position to do that and you have the option to come back, why not take advantage of it?
Right. I'll be honest. I think this season kind of makes it more likely that he doesn't return.
It's possible. I have no idea what's going to happen. And it's not like football either. Like they get 30 games.
Right. And they also, and there's also a lot more places to play after college too. Like if that's what you wanted to do. I don't know. We shall see. There's a lot of questions asking about, or there's a few, I should say, of questions asking, Davis and Waller playing great ball, but who are the other three starters next year?
It depends what seniors come back.
Right. And he goes, and that's Pat saying that. He goes, I know, shut up and enjoy the season. I think that's all you can say because we don't know, right? Carlson looked solid. We don't know exactly what his situation is going to be next year, or I should say the rest of this year. I think it's pretty clear what his situation is this year, but we'll see where he's at next year. And then Stephen Crowell has gotten some playing time a little bit. I don't know what it's going to look like, and we'll see, you know, maybe Lauren Bowman, if he's able to return or when he's able to return, can step into that role as the point guard, but it's going to be a young team no matter what. Like I don't envision, you're not going to get a 25-year-old Demetri Trice back. You know what I mean? Like you're not, Micah Potter, I don't think is coming back. I could see Trevor Anderson perhaps coming back. I could see Brad coming back. Brad and Trevor would be the two guys that I would think are probably most likely to return, but I wouldn't even say that's any kind of a guarantee either. So until you know who's going to come back, probably impossible to try and figure out who's going to be starting next year.
I would say that's fair. It's the most up in the air that it's ever been, because in any other year, you generally knew who was gone. And that's just not what we have. So it in the end, I think it'll be beneficial for Wisconsin's program, even if a couple of those seniors come back, because there's just a considerable drop off in experience after those six guys. If without them, you might be asking some of those true freshmen coming in like a Chucky Hepburn to play a lot of minutes. And maybe he will. I don't know what the point guard situation is going to look like, but I think it'll benefit Wisconsin and the players who do decide to come back next year. But for now, top 15 team, looking like a top four seed in the NCAA tournament, and interested to see how it plays out the next couple months.
Yep, for sure, including on Saturday as they welcome Ohio State to the Kohl Center. Jesse, thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, you've been listening to The Swing here on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.